Well, hello again there, folks. So it looks like we've now come to the end of the era of woke, and it's being put away, as they say. The policies coming in, particularly in America, are explicit. We've had all of these huge corporations deciding to drop woke. It's being flushed down the memory hole. It's being bumped off, done away with. It's all over. Now, how the kind of libtard left are going to cope and deal with all that, that's their problem. I think most people are going to be happy to see the back of it. But what I find interesting is that I've been reading this book. It just so happens that as all of this stuff's been going on, I've been reading a book called Leviathan and Its Enemies by Samuel T. Francis. And there was a chapter which I've reached just in the last day or two, just as all this was going on, as Trump was being sworn in and everything, called The Critique of the Theory of the Managerial Revolution, The Power Elite, Are the Managers Dominant? And I thought this is interesting, and there's some things in here which I thought are really like food for thought. And what Francis is talking about here is obviously the managerial revolution. This book, The Leviathan and Its Enemies, is kind of like a sequel and an expansion on the James Burnham book, The Managerial Revolution. Now, in what you have to think of is managers, and that the West will be dominated and ruled by bureaucrats and managers and technicians of various stripes. And what he's doing in this chapter mainly is addressing a criticism of the theory itself. That's why it says the power elite argument, are the managers dominant? So who is sovereign within these bureaucratic structures? Is it that the man at the top can just issue orders, and then that trickles down and everybody will get on board and everybody will do what they're told? Or will the manager, the CEO, or the person at the top, the owner, be kind of absorbed by the bureaucratic structure and lose agency? This all seems pretty abstract and pretty kind of technical, but if you just bear with me, it's got some very interesting things in that I wanted to talk about. And so I'm going to read through a chunk of it here, because there's some all kinds of thoughts come to my mind as I'm looking at it. And this part, in page 124, he says, the property elite or grand bourgeoisie of the bourgeois order may not have changed significantly in family composition, and certainly it retains wealth and status. Its economic interests, however, have changed from being vested in the hard property of privately owned and operated entrepreneurial firms, usually comparatively small in scale, to being intertwined with and dependent upon the dematerialized property of publicly owned, state-integrated, managerially operated mass corporations. So here he's making a distinction between... Henry Ford is usually the one. In our day and age, you could think of somebody like Elon Musk, because really it's where they've become absorbed. You see this into the neoliberal system, where there's a synthesis between capital. The old entrepreneur, the old go-getter, because Musk isn't, of course, he's completely in hock to state contracts. But the kind of the old entrepreneur who runs a business and he comes out with something, he tended to be kind of against the state. He didn't like the state, whereas now we've got much more of a synthesis where it's all in together. And so what he's talking about is the degree to which a captain of industry can be independent or separate from corporations, the kind of the bureaucracy of the corporation. So he says, even if members of the property elite retain controlling ownership of large blocks of stock, even if they acquire managerial skills and take an active part in corporate business, and even if they assimilate non-elite managers into their own class, the mass corporations on which they depend for their wealth possess interests radically different from those of the entrepreneurial firm. Such corporations must undertake a mass level of production and encourage a mass level of consumption, and therefore they must be integrated with the mass state and the mass organizations of culture and communication to regulate aggregate demand to maintain the level of the technical skills necessary for their operation and to manage consumption through mass advertising. So what we're getting at here, and this is really what I find so interesting, is the idea that there's a logic within the bureaucratic structures, which a boss at the very top can't escape from. And in this case, he's using the example of advertising, because what they are going to do is draft up schemes and mindsets for maximizing profits, which is, of course, what the corporation, the business is supposed to be in doing in the first place. But in order to do that, our CEO will have to outsource who does the advertising. And the advertising itself is going to take on its own ideology. And the whether the CEO or the business owner likes it or not, he can't really get around that. He can't get around these different ways of maximizing their profits. And so he says the corporations, therefore, also must encourage the dissemination of an ethic and ideology of hedonism and economic behavior that legitimizes and promotes the compulsion to seek immediate gratification, as well as the other components of managerial ideology. And this is interesting because this book was written in the 1990s, and what he's doing is looking at the messaging of corporations and bureaucracies in the 90s. And what jumped out at me is when he said this is that the ideology was one of hedonism. Now, if we think of hedonism, if you think a good example back in the 90s, you know, if you imagine all those adverts for Coca-Cola, by today's standards, it seems a lot more wholesome. It's certainly a lot more white. And what you tend to see is this ethic and this mindset of what he calls hedonism, but you can think of it as being individualism. The individual that will find liberty and identity through the items that they are consuming. And of course, it will be the corporations and the capitalist superstructure which provides all of that for them. Now, I realize this all sounds a bit lefty and a bit Marxist, but it's kind of is accurate, an accurate assessment. So in the 90s, of the kind of Gen X individualism and roaming around, it all played into this free-spirited and what could be described as hedonistic culture, where life was only about having a good time, being free from constraints, doing whatever you wanted to do. And so all of the brands catered to this. And in a way, you get into this kind of strange chicken and egg scenario because you think, was that a kind of spirit within the 90s culture or the generation itself? Or was it actually superimposed from outside by corporations and advertising industries to maximize profits? And this is certainly by today's standards, again, people tend to look at the 90s with a bit of nostalgia, and not as much cynicism as what they look at the present. But the fact is, a lot of what we see, especially in media, or old clips of shows on YouTube, a lot of it is actually the production of advertising firms. It's advertising as an ideology. And then he's going to move on in this book, and he says, and in order to realize these interests, the mass corporations, regardless of who owns or legally controls them, must seek to expand their own size and scope and to undermine, discredit, or subsume the institutions, values, and structures of the bourgeois order that constrain the pursuit of managerial interests. But as we've already established, managerial interests, that of the bureaucracy in a corporation, is there to maximize profits. And so what they are going to then do is to try and undermine and break down the kind of the worldview of the CEO of the old money. And remember, again, he's not going to be outside of this because by promoting hedonism in the 90s, that's where his profits are going to lie. It all points in that direction. So he's not exactly outside of it. In other words, he says, the property elite, because of its dependence on managerial capitalism, must cooperate with the corporate managerial elite in the working out of the imperatives and ideologies of the managerial regime, again, the bureaucrats, the middle management, and the weakening of the bourgeois order from which the propertied elite originated. So they may well have started out with these kind of old-fashioned conservative values. That's all going to come crumbling down. It's all going to be under siege, which is exactly what happened. But what I think's fascinating about this is to get back to the era of woke or the end of woke, and to have a look at what's happened. Because when we look at the who was at Donald Trump's inauguration and all of those billionaires, especially the tech firms, we can see that what they were against, what they came out against when they all became anti-woke, it's that woke had become the new ideology of the middle management bureaucrats. And I think what's been happening for a while is, especially with, there's a kind of separate issue to this in regards to Israel and the Middle East and things. But what's happened really is that the managerial bureaucracy, who instead of having the hedonism and individualism that it had in the 90s, it had, I mean, the political correctness was already there in the 90s. It was just beginning to come in. And what you had instead of the idea of hedonism in the 90s was an ethical capitalism. It was anti-racist capitalism. It was pro-rainbow flags. It was pro-LGBT. And it was pro-diversity. And it was pro, importantly, diversity hiring. And so what you've got then is a conflict, which is different to the conflict in the past between the managerial bureaucracy, which was just purely hedonistic, if you like, and the CEOs, the guy at the top, the captain of industry at the top, because the logic could at least be that his profits were being maximized. Once we get to the era of woke, that's no longer the case. If we can call it that, ethical capitalism, as they would like prefer to call it, DEI. All of a sudden, the conflict and the tension between the people right at the top and the managerial bureaucrats in the middle with their ideology becomes kind of existential in a way, because especially when you bring in something like diversity hiring, but you can even see it on that all of these mega blockbusters in Hollywood have tanked. All of these, the film industry is useless. It's cost them hundreds of billions. You see outright boycotts against brands as that we saw throughout the kind of the woke era. And eventually, when it gets to the highly technical aspect of corporations, when you think of things like Tesla, or you think of building spaceships, or you think of the next generation of AI, or you think of Google. It's no longer sustainable. You can't do that anymore. And so the ideology of the middle managers has become an existential threat to the CEOs at the top. They are no longer maximizing their profits through the managerial sort of ideology that existed in the 90s of, say, hedonism and individualism and roaming free under the stars and the typical sort of Gen X thing. The ethical capitalism is actually crippling the ability to earn money itself. And so what we've seen is this revolt from the top. And if you look at, say, Donald Trump's the sort of the coalition is with working and lower middle against the managerial bureaucrats in the middle, perfectly represented by Kamala Harris, and then with the tech bro billionaire class at the top, they find themselves in common cause against the middle. It's the high and the low against the middle, if you like, within the context of white America, really. And so all of a sudden, the bureaucrats are now being purged from the entire system. because they've kind of become a threat to the money power itself. They've become an existential threat to what they're supposed to be in the first place. How they'd replace all of this is, or a lot of it, would probably be AI, which they couldn't even build at peak woke. But what's interesting is that when we step back for a moment and we can say, well, is it always the case that there is an ideology to capitalism? If we go back and we say, well, we had the in the 80s, I would say as well, and the 90s, there was this kind of individualism. You could define your identity through what you bought, what you consumed, and it was associated also with hedonism, having a good time. That sells. That's a good seller. This browbeating, ethical sort of making people feel bad for being white, promoting all of this bizarre sexual behavior and all the rest of them, not so good, especially when it begins to attack the ability of a corporation to make money and the sovereign status of the captain of industry at the top, who is even no longer even making profits. It's all going to hell. But you can go back further and you can think of the good little wife in the kitchen providing for the family. You go back earlier and you can see that there's always been a kind of ideological logic to the capitalism of an era. So this kind of takes us to a question, which is, what will that be in the future? If we're going to go away with woke, what will be the idea? It's super cynical to talk this way, but if we assume that none of this is organic and it is all in a way, the ideology of capitalism, the ideology of the 2020s corporate capitalist structure. My best guess is when we look at the kind of the vibe, again, which is all just sort of convoluted and inorganic, I think they're going to try and go back to the 90s. I think they're going to try and rehash a little bit of hedonism, having a good time, being a free spirit. This will be the post-woke ideology that they're going to try. I don't think that that's going to be possible because of just the conditions, the demographic change, which have already occurred, which are now baked into life in the West, which weren't really there so much in the 80s and 90s. And so what we'll see is messaging from the media and from corporations, which will promote a kind of individualistic hedonism, almost like this kind of retro back to the 90s, them videos and those memes you see on the internet. But it'll be coming from Coca-Cola and Amazon and the rest of it, because they've had to purge themselves of something that was a flop, something which turned out to be a threat, which is now being dealt with, and this is what will be going forward. So I just thought that was a very interesting little chapter of this very interesting book. So thanks for listening, folks, and I'll catch you later.